You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh my golly gosh, I tell you what, this is awesome. This book, I got to tell you something. You know, for people who know me, right? You know, I am a guy that is about purpose and meaning and work. And I even designed a system in my coaching to help people find their natural gifts and talents and abilities, and then how to find purpose from that in their life to make a bigger contribution in the world. And then when I run across a book that speaks not only my language, but speaks everyone's language, I go, it's got to be shared with the world. And you know, we're in 95 countries around the world, and I am so grateful. Listen, I know you guys have a lot of choices out there, and gals, okay? Lots and lots of choices. You choose this show every week. Thank you. I am so grateful to all of you. And the radio stations across this great country that put this show out, thank you so much. DBTV, right? David Bruner TV that you get on Roku and Amazon Fire Stick. You know what? We have 150,000 people who can tune in to watch this show. I want to thank you people for watching the show as well, because this book, I'm telling you, stay with the show, because Burn Ladders and Build Bridges is a book that is going to change your career life. I am telling you this right now. I'm telling you, Dr. Patterson, who is with me, has lived it. I have lived it. And I'm telling you, this is a language that you're going to want to hear. This is a toolkit that you want to pull out. This is a book. If you are in college, this book is for you. If you are an experienced professional and you go, you know what, I'm dreading going to work on Mondays, this book is for you. If you're someone who goes, I just want to do something more meaningful in my life, this book is for you. If you just say, you know what, I'm not living my purpose and I want to find my purpose, this book is for you. I am telling you, there's not a person out there who's listening to me right now that this book is not for. And if you say it's not for you, I guarantee you know somebody that it is for. And that's why we're going to talk about this book today, because it is absolutely brilliant. But before we get to him and the book, we're going to do what we do every week, right? And I walk you through the four areas of your life. We are four-part people: physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. All right. And the truth of the matter is, we need to be working on ourselves in those four areas every single day. I've told you repeatedly that we've interviewed special operations forces people on the shows. We've even interviewed a general who was in the Iraq war on the ground, and they've all said the same thing. And what is that? If you're not working on all of these areas daily, then you know what? You're dying, because we are not growing. And when we're not growing, we are dying, because we never stay the same. And so we have to be an active participant. And you know what? Something that Dr. Patterson says in his book is, guess who's responsible for your engagement? Guess who's responsible for that? You know who that is? You. That's what he says in the book. You're responsible for that. So you're responsible for these four areas. No one else can get you to do this. You have to do it. So physically, here's how it works. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being my training is awful, 10 being my training is outstanding. Physically, you're going to rate yourself in that scale, 5 being average. And what we're going to ask you is, like, in the last 7 days, how would you rate yourself on your exercise, your eating right, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep? How would you rate yourself across the scale, right? Don't worry about the number, because the number isn't as important as that is a starting place of where we're going to get better from, okay? So if your number is a 4, that's okay. We're going to try to get to a 4.25 or a 4.5, not a 10, in one day, right? We're just going to improve a little bit. Maybe it's taking a walk. Maybe it's walking the dog. Maybe it's putting down the bag of chips or the sodas. Maybe it's, instead of drinking that, I'm going to drink a little more water. Maybe it's getting to bed just a little earlier, right? Could be a number of things, right? Go to the doctor, get a checkup. Right, that you haven't done. You haven't taken your physical in a while, right? So that's your first number. Second number is the mental number. You know what? Here's the thing about the mental number, right? It's something. Let's think of it intellectually, right? Your intellectual number. So here's the deal. We have two halves of the brain. We have a right half. We have a left half of the brain. And the right half is very creative. The left half is more logical, right? And we want to exercise both halves of those brains. Well, brain, right? Both halves, right? And the truth is, here's what we got to do, right? We got to find things that we can do to help work on both sides. What does that? Right? So that we could grow in our knowledge and understanding. Well, reading does that, like a book can do that. Taking up a foreign language, taking up an instrument, doing something that is going to enhance your career. Dr. Patterson talks about in this book, and I think it's absolutely brilliant, right? Is you got to be an active participant in your growth. You got to create your own way. Sometimes you got to create your own place in your job. right? You know what? That's going to take creativity, and it's going to also take some logic. That's using both halves of your brain. And you know what? You've got to keep working on improving yourself over the course of time. That requires both halves of your brain. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you are? All right, third area. This is the emotional area. Listen, we've talked about emotional quotients, emotional intelligence on the show. We've talked, Daniel Kahneman, all sorts of folks who have done all sorts of research, Daniel Goleman, on emotional intelligence. The truth of the matter, it comes down to two things. One is, how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? And then the second is, how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of others? And that requires active listening. You know who says that in his book? Dr. Patterson talks about active listening in his book. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself in emotional intelligence, right? Okay, good. Okay, that's your third number. Fourth number, spiritual. You know what? It's really interesting about the spiritual, because if you remove the physical, mental, and emotional, what you have left is a spiritual part of yourself. We all have a spirit that we run to. We all have faith in something. We have to believe in something. We all, when things go bad, the first thing we run to is generally our God, because we believe that that's going to give us peace, or it's going to make things be centered, right? And the truth of the matter is, what we're looking for is, in the midst of chaos, is we're looking for something that can bring us peace and centeredness, right? For a lot of people, that is God. For some people, it's nature or meditation or something else. The question is, how's it working for you? And then you know, what are you going to do to change it? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate that yourself on that level? All right, those four areas, right? You put those numbers together. It's kind of like the air in your tires, right? If the air in your tires are uneven, you know what happens is your car doesn't run right, right? And if one is really, really low, you're going to ruin the car, and you're going to ruin the tires. The whole point is to bring up all your tires to the right inflated height so that the car can drive right, because you're that car. And speaking of someone who's got his tires inflated correctly, his name is Dr. Alan Patterson. He has more than 3 decades of international consulting experience in change management, leadership development, and executive coaching. 2006, he formed Mentor. Is it Mentor or Mentore?
Mentore.
Thank you. A consulting practice that focuses on aligning strategy, organizational structure, job responsibilities, and skill sets to shift major businesses. He has worked with a number of great organizations. You may have heard of some of these, like Anheuser-Busch, Biogen, Federal Reserve Bank, Johnson & Johnson, Hewlett-Packard, Major League Baseball, Merck, SeaWorld. You may have heard United States Navy. You may have heard of some of those. He's been featured speaker, workshop leader, and expert resource for the American Institute of CPAs and the Business Learning Institute, and giving presentations to several human resource associations. He's also served as adjunct faculty in the executive of MBA programs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and in Wisconsin-Oskosh, and graduate schools at Bryant University and Lesley University. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, and welcome for the first time, and hopefully not your last, Dr. Alan Patterson. Welcome to A New Direction.
Jay, I want to say something, okay?
Sure.
I'm exhausted. I haven't felt this upbeat this quickly. And you know what's funny? I think we've met each other in a different life. I really, honest to God, I really, really think we
did. You think we did?
I think so.
I got to tell you something. I felt like I was going, did I help him write this book? Because we've had the same thought.
You did.
We have the same thought processes here.
You talk about mavericks, and I talk about ladder burners, and other people talk about rebels.
Right.
And other people talk about outsiders and troublemakers. And we're talking about the same kind of person and the same kind of mindset.
We are.
So we, and you know what? You've got me by 11 inches. I'm 5'4". 5'4" and a half. The half is really the important.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's all good. It doesn't matter. Can I tell you something? It's not the size of the man, it's the size of the heart. And that's all. And you know what? Your heart is as big as mine. And we have a heart for people, and we want to see them succeed and grow. And we want to see them find their purpose and in this world and make a contribution to life much bigger than themselves.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, and that's what you and I know you and I are about that. And I read that in your book, and it really came forth in every page that I read in this book. And I have highlighted it and dog-eared it. it's in pretty bad shape after I've gotten through with it, reading it twice. But it's such an inspirational book, and I think people who are looking for a career, and I just want to share something that you wrote, because I want to tell people what the purpose of his book, because this is what he wrote in a purpose. My purpose is to, and this is Dr. Patterson talking, is to validate the hazards in climbing the corporate ladder, that may be speaking to you, propose a different approach to career development. Boy, you're probably looking for that. Describe the principles, practices, and skills needed to engage in work with meaning and purpose, and we all are looking for that. And when you start to see that he puts that purpose out there right at the beginning, you need to know that he's got a heart for you. And so wherever you're listening to us right now or watching us, you're gonna see that in there. So so let's just jump right in. Chapter one is titled "To Swim in the Pacific Ocean." And you talk about the American way, right? And you actually have a subtitle here called "American Dream or American Myth." Let's talk about that for a little bit. What do you mean?
Sure.
There? Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Jay. I got started on this for lots of reasons. It really came out of work that I did with my client, but I really got hung up, I guess, because I was a history major, about the. We talk about the American dream, and the reality is people come to this country and want the American dream. Mm. But when you take it apart and you realize who that works for and who it doesn't, it's a mirage to a lot of people. Mm. It's based on hard work and where it comes from. And I got all hung up about what was the difference between the Puritans and the Pilgrims and the reason for coming here.
Right.
And I am absolutely intrigued by what seems to be so American about this. If it exists, we have the right to go after it. I mean, how do you explain westward right. expansion as a need? And it is so baked into what we do. That all those original principles that people came here for the freedom, the religious freedom part. Right. But beyond that, what really got baked into what I think later evolved into the latter was this very firm belief that working with your hands and hard work was doing God's work. Mm-hmm. And so that was the focus, and for that you would be rewarded,
right.
And you get this push and this need to, depending on which historian you read, about why was it better on the frontier? Because right. the frontier is really the line between what's existed and what can exist,
right.
And that really, it from a psychological point of view, and I'm not a psychologist. Many days I think I am or offer free advice, but I can tell you that is partly what seems to drive what it means to what the American dream is.
Right.
The reality, and I think we've seen it. I haven't experienced this sure. as much as people that are not white and that are not men. Have known for years, and that unfortunately the dream doesn't work for everybody, and that's why I think it's a myth.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further than the obvious. I think, you know, psychologically, as a psychological professional, I think one of the things that I tell my clients and I tell people is, you know, the myth is that hard work leads to success, because, you know, your best efforts may not lead to anything.
Right.
And at the same time, some people may not give their best effort and it can lead to amazing things. And so this idea that somehow hard work equates to success is really not true. It may have been true. It may have been true early on where, you know, like you said, in the frontier, you know, because you worked with your hands, that, you know, you worked hard and you had to work the land and you did that. And that would, you know, eventually over time create success. But in terms of today, you know, your effort does not necessarily return a result.
Right.
You know, I think that's the.
I apologize for barking.
No, that's okay. You know, dogs bark. You know.
That's my point. And that one of the first stories that I tell is about what it means when someone really grabbed me in a client scenario and said, "I have to talk to you. I didn't get the promotion that I wanted." And I said, "Well, tell me what happened." "Well, you know, I did everything that I was supposed to. And I was told I did a good job all year long. And then and this wasn't in competition with other people. This was just to move up from senior, you know, junior to senior." And so I said, "Well, did you go to your boss and talk about this?" And her response was, and it, you know, it could have been him or her.
Sure.
The response was, "Why would I do that?"
Mm.
And it made me realize, and this is very personal to me. I mean, this is how I grew up. I was what I would call a classic high achiever, you know, studied hard, worked hard. And I expected that there would be a payoff for that, that a good job speaks for itself. And it doesn't. And the reason is because of the judgment that comes into it. And you can say that's right or wrong. That's just reality. People make judgments about people all the time.
Right.
But unless you know what that means and how you work through that. And so now, Jay, it's a skill set issue. Of course you talk to your boss. As a matter of fact, you're the one, if you're going to burn the ladder, you're the one that's going to initiate those discussions. Jay, let me get some thoughts from you and ideas from you about what I'm expected to do and what success looks like.
Right.
I'm really all ears so that I understand where I am and how I stand in terms of where we now. Let me ask you a question. What's it going to take a year from now if I want to move up to the next level? And I mean, in as concrete terms as possible.
Right.
Oh, you can have those conversations. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you should be. Say,
yeah, you should.
Right. Yeah. And I think we get hesitant, right? I mean, I think people are hesitant to have those conversations.
I use a story, and feel free to, and this was at Carolina, so you can talk about it being, you know, nearby, about a friend of mine, a fellow I went to school with, to high school with. He and I were in the same chemistry class, and we both bombed on the first exam. And I happened to see him toward the end of the semester, or at the end of the semester. I said, "Bill, how'd you do?" He said, I ended up doing great. He said, "How about you?" I said, "You know, I got better. My grades got better. It wasn't my best performance." I said, "So what did you study your tuchus off?" And he said, "No, I went in and talked to the professor and said, hey, look, I messed up on the first exam. What do you say we go all in on the final?" And he said, that's fine. And that's what he did. Mm. So you can negotiate your grade. Yeah. Right. It happens all the time.
Well, listen, I was a college professor, right? Just like you, right? And when students would come to me and say something to the effect of, "Listen, I know I didn't do well on this exam. I don't believe this is my best effort. Is there something that I can do? Is there anything that I can take responsibility for that I can bring this up?" And I'm going to tell you, without fail, every single time I would say, "Absolutely, we'll find something."
Yeah.
Because I knew that they were willing to take responsibility for it.
So I listen, you're going to direct me where you would like to go with this. I just want to make one comment.
Sure.
What you describe as mavericks, I'm making a big leap of faith, and I describe as ladder burners.
Right.
To me, it's an issue of we are and work has become a very important part of many people's lives.
Yeah.
And I'm saying there's no black or white.
Right.
And it's the person that says, "Professor Izzo, can we talk about this last test?"
Right.
And it's like, "Sure, I've got office hours today."
Right.
That's what I'm saying is like, you ask the dumb questions. A person asks the dumb questions because they're really not dumb at all.
No.
They're really smart.
Yes.
And it's like, why wouldn't people? I don't, and I'm not talking about in college. I'm talking about at work.
Right.
It's like, you know, Dr. Patterson, I'm not sure what that means when you say we need to work smarter, not harder. Give me, can you tell me what that means? I really want to know. And it's like everybody else is going, I'm glad I didn't do that.
But it's so true. By the way, the book is entitled Burn Ladders and Build Bridges, and we're just getting started here with Dr. Alan Patterson. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, I have two outstanding sponsors. One is Epic Physical Therapy. They are my physical therapists, but not just mine. They're the physical therapists of professional athletes and people all over. I'm telling you, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, go to epicpt.com. That's E-P-I-C-P-T.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, for more than 35 years, they've been serving the world, really. The truth is, they're independently owned and operated. They do not belong to a national company. So they've made relationships with the best people in your area. So when you're ready to sell your home, buy your home, and you want to find out who's the best person that I should be working with, start with Linda Kraft and team. That's lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And I need to give a shout out to Hint Water, because Hint Water is the official beverage of DBTV, right? It used to be DBNA TV. It is now DBTV. So you know what? We drink Hint Water. We think you should too, because it is delicious. And we're back here on A New Direction with Dr. Alan Patterson and his book, Burn Ladders and Build Bridges. And you know, I want to kind of, there's a part of me that wants to kind of go through this step by step, and there's a part of me wants to jump around. But I want to talk about the two major games. In chapter two, Achieve in Advance, or Achieve Advance is the name of the chapter. And you talk about we're active players in two major games for the better part of our lives, and that's work and education. And of course, you then mentioned one of my favorite social psychologists, Irving Goffman, who I'm a big fan of. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, both education and work is a game, right? That we try to play, right? And we've already kind of talked about it, but David McClelland, who was a Harvard social psychologist that you mentioned in the book, talking about motivation and intrinsic drives, he was the one who came up with the idea of the need for achievement. Let's talk about that in light of this game that we play.
Here's a little fact that you may or may not know. He was Daniel Goldman's thesis advisor at Harvard.
Really? I didn't know that.
As well as Rick Boyatzis.
How about that?
So you've got, and they formed McBurr, and the Mac and McBurr was David McClelland. I didn't know. I worked there for a while. I didn't know Daniel Goldman. He was, our paths didn't cross.
Right.
But McClelland really cast a big shadow. Interesting, McClelland wanted to find out, the way I understand it, the relationship between economic systems and human motivation. Mm-hmm. He was intrigued by entrepreneurism, capitalism, and did cross-cultural studies. And what he discovered, and I've used forever in the work that I've done, is that people have this native, if you will, motivation. I say, what is it? Is it chemical? Is it running through our veins? It's in our head. And the three, in no particular order, are power, which is the need to have impact on people. Mm-hmm. Achievement, which is to do things, do tasks efficiently and effectively. And then affiliation, which is the need to establish close personal relationships. Mm-hmm. So the achievement is, to me, is synonymous with the building of America. I mean, that's really both economically and socially, it's at the root. And yeah, we talk about high achievers and achievement as something that's very important. And it is, don't get me wrong, I'm not dissing achievement.
Right.
It's that what's happened. And that's why I start with a playground. You ask a child, you know, you look at a child and say, what do they operate off of? They're operating off real, true, intrinsic motivation. They're not motivated by anything else. That's just what play is all about. Okay, so, you know, you want to be a kid forever? I mean, I'm still in adolescence, so I can say, yeah, it's not so bad. But when you look at it, what happens in achieve and advance in education is the the push to get the right answer, the push to get results, ends up being the biggest driver in terms of what's rewarded. So it starts with stickers and it goes to ribbons and then and it goes to grades and it goes to colleges that you apply for. But achieve and advance is the name of the game. And it is a solo effort. And you were not reward. I mean, people work in groups, but that's not the goal. The goal is you, Jay Izzo, are to achieve. And I can only imagine you were involved in sports. Yes. Well, what's the point? The point is do your best and be the best. And so you can't say that's not, I can't say or don't feel it's not important. I'm saying, but what about all the other stuff? Well, you've got four principles. You don't have one. Right. You've got four.
Right.
And I'm not going to steal them. But you can't tell me that achievement is going to answer all of those.
They don't.
Principles of why they're important. Mm. And so what I say is me, I was the good, I'm not saying you weren't, I was the good student. I was the one that, I can hear my dad saying, well, all A's and one B, of course he's going to say why the B.
Right.
And so when you realize people that are on that path and those that become perfectionists, it becomes overachievers. It becomes problematic over time. It is a tremendous amount of pressure. Now, put them in a work setting and people think they're playing the same game. Work hard. Achieve, get everything, do everything you're told to do, and you're going to just continue to advance. And the issue is, it's not true.
It's not true. Because
it's not.
Go ahead. Well, one of the things that just bothers me about this, you know, this whole achieve thing. And listen, I was in college and I got my grades and went to grad school and, you know, worked on my master's and towards my doctorate degree. And you know, the truth of the matter is, that's all fine and well, and I have no regrets. I'm glad I did it and everything like that. But then when I get into the workforce, what I really find is creativity is so much more important. Being able to be emotionally available and understanding the emotions of other people becomes far more greater than anything I could have achieved. You know, as an entrepreneur, it's the creativity that I find so much more valuable, right? Are results important? Of course. Do I have to make a living? Of course. But those other things, it's getting out of that mode of I've got to do X, Y, and Z so I can move my little pawn across the chessboard versus, versus going, I'd rather be a knight that can move in an L pattern and in a bunch of L patterns and allow myself to be a little bit more free to explore and find.
You're ladder burner. That's your problem.
Well, I know.
It's like I say, I don't have to destroy the box. I don't have to destroy their box. It never existed. As I say in the manifesto, it's not in the books, but it's like, you don't have to, you're not talking about changing the rules. You're talking about changing the game.
Right.
And it's like, I understand what the path is.
Right.
But if you are motivated by curiosity, I think these are two big motivators. And of course, curiosity is in.
Right.
And people have been beaten back because they're curious. I had a fellow the other day, client I used to coach, I was talking to, he said, you know, I got kudos for trying a lot of new things. He's a biotech, brilliant scientist, but he got involved in supply chain and working with manufacturing, all kinds of stuff. He said, I'm getting beaten down by my manager. He said, just do your job. Yeah. Don't do all this other stuff. Who would you want working for you? Somebody said, you know, I've never been in supply chain before. What if I go down there and find out more about how all this stuff fits together and so forth? And that's exactly what he did. But people aren't rewarded unless you're in, and if we talk about culture, even those places that reward the creativity or the expectation, like R&D facilities, right, you know, that need you to be that. But if you believe in your heart that creativity is important, and on the other side of that is I have stayed away from trying to call it critical thinking. I don't think it's critical thinking. I think it's discernment. How's that for a religious word?
Oh, I like that.
Because it's meaning. It's like, why are you doing, what got you to this point, right, Jay, right, of doing what you're doing now? Tell me, and I mean, you could be my publicity person here, and I appreciate all that. It's like, I mean, isn't this what it's really about?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't this kind of joy? Isn't this kind of fun?
Yes.
Isn't this kind of like you? And so what I say and what I believe in, I think, which is what you believe in, don't squash the curiosity. Build it.
Yes.
Don't squash the discernment.
Right.
Get people interested. And you know what? It is all, I mean, this is one concept I'm really playing with now. It's all about approaching these situations that we're in, if you're in the world of work, but it's anywhere, as, isn't this interesting? Isn't this, I wonder how we're going to figure this out. And there's a great Dean Smith story with, I don't know, it's probably legends. I could have been Wooten or maybe Krzyzewski, but I heard it as Dean Smith, that the Heels basketball team were down by, I don't know, 3 points with 10 seconds to go, and he called a timeout and brought him over and said, isn't this fun? Isn't this cool to be in this position? And we can win this game. And you think, those are the kind of people you want to be around.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole new definition. That's we're free. We're freestyling.
Right.
And it's not like anything goes. It's that once you get a sense, and you have more, I think you probably in your coaching experience have more experience than I do, Jay, in this, is, you know, how do you help people find what's critical and important to them? If that's what it is they're looking for.
Right.
And I call me silly. I think most people are. And I'm not saying that money's not important. I'm not saying that everybody gets stuck. That's
right.
What I said in the book. I mean, some people seem to, I talked to one fella that CPA, and he said, I tried that for a couple of years and that was dumb. I didn't want to do that. I just jumped and went to my cousin, started a business. And so you see where people that give it up and think that someone else is responsible for their professional development, someone else is responsible for their engagement.
Right.
No.
No.
Absolutely not. No.
Right.
And I say the only person that really cares if you're smart beside yourself is your mother. Other people don't care. What people care about is how you can help them. So I'm saying, I don't know, why don't we just go for it?
Yeah, I you and I are just some, I love what you're saying. I really do. It's awesome stuff. You know, you've chapter 3, you talk about the road to not good enough. But before you got there, you actually, by the way, I just want to let people know the way this book is designed. At the end of each chapter, he has a section called Food for Thought. And he asks some questions, or he gives you some highlights and or combination of both. And he had, at the end of this chapter or two, he had The Cost of Perfectionism, which is a brilliant read for those of you who are perfectionistic or feel like you're on that border, really insightful. And it backs up right to the chapter 3, which is called The Road to Not Good Enough. And I think it's really interesting that that is something that I think we know it, but we don't want to talk about it. Do you know what I mean? Where we go, we give everybody the pep talk. You can be anything that you want, and hard work creates future opportunities. And of course, then you talk about the ladder was born out of the scientific school of management to control and incentivize work through greater predictability and uniformity. And people,
yeah,
and people don't understand that this whole ladder climbing thing that we all have a tendency to do when you work is killing us.
Literally.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we talk about take these two pills and call me in the morning. Right. One is
like,
right. I love this. The two pills are what got you here won't get you there. And climbing the ladder is not about performance, but the judgment of performance, which you've kind of mentioned. Right. Those are the two pills. Right.
Yeah, that's the Marshall Goldsmith. It's like, I wish I had thought of that. You know? Got you here, won't get you there. Well, right. How is that possible? Right. Well, and you've got Lawrence Peter, who must have been a real kook. He must have been, I mean, I was in college at the time, so it's not like I didn't know who he was, but you know, people get promoted to their level of incompetence. Right. I think it's more than that. Jay, I think, and my buddies and I, when I was consulting with them in Rhode Island, the way we described it is that people get promoted to a level where the game has changed from achievement to power and influence. Yeah. And many don't have that skill. They don't understand. I had a client that once I said, well, how do you spend your day? And she said, well, she had a very, very senior position in a defense contractor, huge. She said, I spend most of my day in meetings. I said, you probably hate that. She said, no, I don't hate it at all. That's where I meet the people I have to be working with. So how you don't get there. That's not how, I don't know. I wasn't trained that way. Right. I didn't think that way. It's right. Like, no, I don't want to deal with it. It's like, no, that's the stuff. That's the stuff. And once you break this down, right. Once you realize, the reason I say it's the road to not good enough is that constant drive, that feeling like, especially if you don't get the job or get the promotions, what did I do wrong? It is so out of your control.
Right.
And I'm not saying don't go for it. I'm not saying 3 seconds left and 5 points behind. I mean, right. Carolina beat Duke with, I think I scored 14 points in 10 seconds one time. It's right. Like, hallelujah. I'm not saying don't have the drive. I'm right. Saying have the drive.
Right.
But do it around those things that are really critical and important to you. And not left to the judgment of others. I understand other people are going to give you feedback along the way. Right. That's good. And the best feedback, you tell me, when you know that somebody's got your back and they say, look, let's talk about what you just did. I want to tell you what I saw. That's a gift. You know, so but where are those people? Those people don't, those people are out there. And part of what I say is moving through the chapters is you have to find those people. Much like, I don't know how the heck you found me, but buddy, you found me and I'm grateful.
I'm great. Serious. Well, I'm grateful too. Well, we'll talk about how we found each other, but I am very grateful too that we've done that. You know, I want to talk about one thing that you say in this chapter is called Who's to Blame for Employee Engagement. And you give a 2016 Gallup study, and you said some results that there's a direct and measurable correlation between employee engagement and business performance, including productivity, retention, customer satisfaction, safety, and profit. And you quote, and I'm going to quote you here, you said, workers are more important when they are missing than when they are present, and that's a problem. I think the point that you were making here is that shouldn't workers be more important when they're there? But we just notice them when they're gone, right? That's when we notice that people are employees. We're not paying attention to them because they're supposed to be there every day. But as soon as they're gone, we're paying more attention to them missing than them being there.
Yeah, I didn't say it this way in the book, but it's one of my favorite 3,000 little cliches. It's a diving catch. You know, it's like, we can't lose. I remember when I was working for a software company at one time, and the guy that was the guy, it was out of his head that created this entire product to the company, left. How could that happen?
Right.
How could that possibly happen?
Right.
I think what Gallup shows, I mean, I don't get my juices flowing, Jay, thinking that since 2000 or 2002, that average level of engagement is 36%, 35, yeah. 33. I that does nothing for me.
Right.
That means 2/3 of discretionary effort is left on the table.
Right.
And we want to talk about process improvement, and it's just give me good people.
Right.
I'm not opposed to continuous improvement.
Right.
I don't know how you feel. Doesn't that strike you? If you were on a football team and you thought that people were giving just 30%, they were engaged only 30%. I know it wouldn't fly in Green Bay, but you know, what do you do with that?
Well, I don't know, because it's exactly the point. The point is, you know, that if only 30% of your team, I don't care what the sport is actively engaged and 2/3 are not, you can't win. I'm sorry, you can't win. You can't perform.
Well, I think it's even more schizophrenic. I think it's 2/3 of the person. It's not. Yeah, I mean, that's another way of looking at it. But that's just another interpretation that I'm putting on it. But, you know, they do extremely engaged, right, somewhat engaged, whatever the 5-point scale is.
Right.
And so it's like 33% are only at that, on those higher two levels.
Right.
So you're right. It's really people that are saying they're not engaged. But what if it were schizophrenic? I mean, somebody that's in, when somebody is in that middle group, just somewhat engaged, if your customers told you were doing, they were somewhat pleased with your services, what do you do with that?
Wow.
Oh, that's good enough. Baloney.
Wow. The book, I'm so engrossed in listening to Dr. Patterson. The book is called Burn Ladders and Build Bridges, Pursuing Work with Meaning Plus Purpose. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, Epic Physical Therapy, listen, they have top-of-the-line equipment at all their locations. And yes, I said locations. Look, my favorites are the Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, the Game Ready. Ice and compression all at the same time. Blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, that's just a few. They're trained and certified most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments, and they design a program specifically for you. Listen, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and epic results, go to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. Listen, for more than 35 years, her clients have been coming back to her year after year. In fact, her first client from 1985 still comes back to see her today. Her clients call her the legend of customer service. And there's a reason why she served thousands of people. And you know what? She'd love to serve you. Why not check out Linda Kraft and team? Why not go to lindakraft.com? That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Dr. Alan Patterson. His book is called Burn Ladders and Build Bridges. And we're working our way through the book as we do every week on A New Direction. And it is a great book. I want to give a quote that bounces off the end of chapter 3 here that you say, and it's brilliant. It's time to stop blaming and thinking somebody owes you something, particularly when it comes to workplace engagement. Finding meaning is your responsibility. That's powerful.
Talk to me.
That's powerful.
Talk to me.
Well,
yeah. What I'm saying is, how did that happen? How does that happen? Listen, I've been there. I don't know about you, Jay.
Yes.
You know, somebody, I've worked my tush off here.
Right.
You know, I'm giving you everything I've got, or maybe I'm not.
Right.
But nobody owes you anything, and you want to be engaged. How is it? And this is one of the biggest issues that organizations face about thinking about culture is going to solve it. And I can't tell you how many cultural initiatives I've been a part of. And you want to go back and read, go back to Cotter, go back to when people started looking at change management, and he said 2 out of 3 change initiatives. And he was maybe one of the first, but not the only, to say they fail.
Right.
And when you look at it, because the culture thing, it's a great approach, but I have been in 40 years part of one and only one initiative that succeeded. And it was 100% dependent on one of the brightest, smartest, nicest, sweetest, best leaders I ever saw. I love that guy because he just did it.
Right.
And he left, take another job. And the four people that were under him had no boss for like 8 months. They seemed to do just fine. Mm. So you can't leave unless you have people that you can really inspire and motivate. That's a slightly different question than what you're asking. I'm saying, just understand there's no animosity here. There's no should. Right. There's no blame. You can't blame your company right. for not knowing what motivates you intrinsically. People aren't psychologists. You're lucky if you get a good manager and even more lucky if you get a leader. And you know what, Jay, the jackpot. And you tell me if you ever had this at work, maybe not. Well, look at it. What I'm trying to say is the jackpot is getting a leader that is a good coach.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree.
That's premium. I mean, did you ever have a boss? I don't know what your work background is. That was a really good coach.
Yeah, I've had several. Fortunately for my life, I was a farmhand in Nebraska, and Bob Lilydahl was one of the greatest, who passed away here a year or so ago, and was one of my greatest mentors. At times he was hard on me when he needed to be hard on me, but he taught me so much. Taught me so much and made me figure it out on my own and pushed me, gave me just enough, and then said, now I need you to go figure this out. Now go, do it. Use your imagination. Be creative. Come up with a way that you can fix this. He was great at that, right? And I've had so many throughout my life in college. I'm thinking of Tom Hood, who was my defensive coach, who was open to hearing suggestions and, even in college as a college football player, was open to hearing us, what we thought, and how he was so likable and lovable. And you,
how motivating was that?
Oh, you wanted to fall on your sword for him. You would, I'm serious. You'd have fallen on his sword for the guy. I mean, he never yelled at us, but you could tell when he was disappointed and you couldn't wait to get back out there because you were going to kill somebody because he was disappointed. because you didn't want to disappoint him because you loved him so much and you knew that he had your best interest at heart and you were like, okay, I'll take a bullet if I have to. And I've been fortunate to have those people.
Well, and I'm sure you've been able to, I say it's not giving back. I say it's giving.
Right.
That's what this is. That's what we're talking about.
Right. I totally agree. Hey, I'm going to move to chapter four because chapter four is one is that everybody talks about. I deal with it, and I know you deal with it too. It's called the state of stuck. And I've built a career on helping people get unstuck. And this chapter really resonated with me. And you started off with this. You say this. It's not uncommon that sooner or later people begin to question what they're doing and why they're doing it. People get stuck. Let's talk about getting people unstuck from your perspective.
Well, I had to go to the experts for this because when I was writing, because I hadn't really thought of this until as I interviewed people, I realized that and I thought about my own life too, but I hadn't never thought of being stuck. The way that I would recommend that people get unstuck is it's not a head thing. It's not sitting down. This is my opinion and doing what do I like? What do I hate? The two column matrix. It's talking to you. It's talking to other colleagues that can help me understand what it is. I mean, this is therapy in a way when you think about the ability to talk it out is much different than in your head. And then it's going toward the baby steps, experimentation, move forward. Well, why don't you try this? You think you might like accounting? I don't know. Let's go. Let's see if there's an assignment there or it, so it takes the action and baby steps to move out of the unstuck part to be able to move forward. I don't think a Professor Ibarra, I her work is
Hermina,
really good.
Hermina Ibarra is amazing.
It is brilliant. I don't know if you've ever talked to her.
I have not.
I mean, she just makes it's like changing your finding yourself is the outcome. It's not right. The input.
Right.
And I think that's pretty. So we're not. You and I are not going to go to the mountaintop and expect that you're going to find yourself. Is you and I going to go to the mountaintop and you're going to say, you know what? I think maybe we got a business of putting a zip line from this mountain to the next because I'm tired of doing what I was doing.
Right. Yeah, I love her stuff. I think one of the things that you say here, and I think she's influenced it too, she said getting unstuck is not starting out, it's starting over. And I think what people need to understand, and this is where I thought you were so brilliant, is in your food for thought, getting stuck in your career is your wake-up call.
Yeah.
That's powerful. If we can reframe that in our head, because this is where I think mindset becomes so important in this. If you can think in your head, and I wish I'd have had this thought when I was stuck, that, you know what, this stuck is not a bad thing. This stuck is my wake-up call that you got to be doing something else. You need, and it requires me to take action, because you talk about this a lot. You can't think your way unstuck. You can't think your way out of being unstuck. You got to do something. Right? I mean, I think what happens is so frequently, and I know you see this too, is that when people get stuck, they freeze, right? You know, we talk about the flight or fight, and then, but there's this third component of that. It's freeze that we initially do. And some people get stuck in the freeze and they don't run and they don't fight. They just stay there and frozen. And so they try to think their way out of stuck. I did. I tried to think my way out of stuck. Guess what I did? Nothing. I stayed there, and you, in this book, and your food for thought, is, and here I'm gonna just move to something else. You say, don't try to think your way out of being stuck. You need to do something, then think why the experiment was so important. We learn who we are only by living. Oh God, this is beautiful. We learn who we are only by living, not before.
I wish I could claim that as my own.
That is beautiful.
It is. It's poetry. I mean, I don't know. I'm grooving on your spiritual over there.
Well, it is spiritual for me.
And deep. Well, let me. I know our time's coming to the close here, and so maybe we'll get a chance to do more of this. I want to say the Dichi, who I found out was the guy, and along with his business partner, academic partner. They talked about intrinsic motivation. Mm-hmm. He said it's spiritual. Mm-hmm. When you find yourself and you really groove on it, it's the it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just hope people who feel unstuck will reframe it in your head, and that you'll reframe this to understand that you're stuck is your signal to do something else. It's your wake-up call. I love that. Chapter 5, real quick, I want to just talk about ladder burner beliefs. Let's just talk about a few of the ladder burner beliefs, because ladder burners, I call them mavericks, but I love ladder burners. Give us a few of the ladder burner beliefs. But what is a ladder burner?
Well, I think that one of the biggest things, biggest thought process is that they're meaning and purpose define how their career develops. Mm. And so it's highly nonlinear, and that's not a problem at all. They're looking for ladder burners, look for inspiration through people. And I call these people interested and interesting, and they inform you of what that means to what they mean to you and what's critical and important to you. Ladder burners, don't worry about they don't worry about the formality. It's not that they will challenge authority all the time, but I say they like to open a closed door. I always think of the movie theater. You know, one door's open and the other exits are closed, and it's on, and they're not locked for the most part. Nobody goes through them. Ladder burners do, because they are really motivated by something that is much more meaningful. And I think it's not, people have asked me, well, are you talking about extroverts and people? And no, that's not it. I think it's having that confidence that motivation, that what you're motivated by is who you are, and that you're comfortable with that. And that is just fine.
You know, we've been on an hour and it's gone so fast. I've totally enjoyed this with you.
Me too.
I would love to bring you back sometime. I hope you would be willing
to. Let's do it.
I would love to do that. Tell people, Dr. Patterson, how they can get a hold of you.
Ladderburners.com. Go there, you find a place, or you could, if you want to email me, it's my sister's site there, A. Patterson. Oh, no, sorry, let me go back. You'll like this, Jay. Trouble@ladderburners.com.
Love it. Trouble@ladderburners.com.
That's me. Trouble. And the book, where's the book going to be? Book's going to be at Amazon.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and anywhere books are sold, you can ask them for it. Right. They'll get it in for you as well. It's a beautiful book. Burn ladders, build bridges. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the show. You know what I say to you every week. You know what? You're in control of three things in your life, regardless of what happens. It's not always easy, but you're in control of your attitude, your effort, and your resiliency. It's up to you to take control of those things, because you can do that. It's not, again, it's not easy, but you can, because those are within your control every day of your life. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show, as I say to you every week. And I want to thank all of you everywhere. Ciao, everybody.
Things are going to change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength.